So what are we actually going to do now?
Well, first of all, we're going to talk about, this is file 50, oh no, this is file 64, cycle 2. Today's date is August 23, 2017. This is Jean McMillan. And I am interviewing John Higgins, who's going to talk about everything he talked about before, his business, the P&Z, SWASA, Salisbury Family Services, Salisbury Visiting Nurses, and anything else he wants to talk about. So we'll start with the genealogical information. What is your name?
Jonathan Higgins.
And what's your birth date?
4/11/51.
And where were you born?
Sharon Hospital in Sharon, Connecticut.
And your parents' names?
Thomas Joseph Higgins and Evelyn M. Higgins.
And her maiden name was?
Farwell.
Farwell. And you have siblings?
I do. I have a twin sister, Jacqueline, and three brothers, Thomas, Michael, and Gary.
Okay. What is your business, the Ascendant Compliance Management?
Ascendant Compliance Management is a financial services consulting firm that works with investment professionals on all the regulatory requirements that are necessary to perform their function, both on a federal and state level. They have different rules that they have to abide by to give individuals financial advice or to conduct the transactions for that financial advice if somebody takes it. There's different rule sets, and we work with them to ensure that they're complying with all the federal regulations and all the state regulations if they apply.
And there's a lot of regulations, aren't there?
There are a lot of regulations.
And what's your position in the company?
I'm president and CEO. Started it in December of 2006. And we have 42 employees now.
Wonderful. What is
we have offices in San Francisco, New York, and St. Louis now, and Boston and Connecticut. Salisbury, Connecticut.
And Salisbury is the headquarters?
Yes.
Wow!
Yeah.
That's impressive. Where is your business in Salisbury located? What's the address?
We're at 194 Main Street. Now, when we started, we were just across from the ambulance garage at 16 Conklin. And we had six people when we started. And now we're actually two locations in town, one 194 Main Street and one 323A Main Street in Lakeville, behind the post office in the Methodist Church. We have two locations.
Behind the post office, the brick building?
No, it's actually as you're going into Dr. Kerber's office,
the
big green building that's just before you just enter that road. It's between the post office and the church.
Okay. Are you planning to expand any more, or have you reached your
limit? Well, that's an interesting question because we weren't planning to expand beyond six. And just the nature of the business and the issues we come across and the services we provide just sort of happen naturally.
Mm-hmm. That's the best way.
Yeah, so we have a gentleman that's from London that runs our IT group, and we're working with some other people to expand some of the services that we provide to the international community. So it'll probably continue to get larger. But
that's wonderful.
Yeah,
I mean, that's successful.
We're very lucky.
It's good hard work and knowledge. It's not, there's a little luck in there too, but it's still good hard work and knowledge. Now we're going to talk a little bit about skiing. Mm-hmm. Way back when Lime Rock Park, and you were teaching cross-country skiing. Why were you teaching skiing?
Well, before I had this business, had a retail store in town, which was right across from the post office, which is now the Lockup Restaurant. Mm-hmm. But that was a retail store called the Village Store.
And that came in after Shag Roy's.
Right. We actually were in, our first store was in where the Salisbury Wine Shop is now. And Buddy Trotta was the landlord and owned the building that Shag Roy was in. Shag Roy moved to Levon's across the street. And then we eventually moved into that space with the sporting goods and retail store. And as a result of that, we sold cross-country skis and downhill skis and bicycles and sporting equipment. And the opportunity came up for cross-country ski rental facility at Lime Rock Park. So we started that, in, 75, 76, something like that, I guess.
Okay, yeah.
And one of the reasons was Salisbury Winter Sports was sponsoring the Travelers Derby, it was called. It was a huge annual cross-country ski event, and it was on Selick Hill. And then for various reasons, they were not going to do it there anymore, so we attempted to move it to Lime Rock Park.
Yeah.
And we went through the necessary approval process through planning and zoning.
Good.
And did that for just a year, I think it was, maybe a year and a half. We did the Travelers Derby, and then the next year and following years, we had no snow. So we didn't continue it. But it was a great experience.
Oh, yeah. And is that how you evolved into working with Swanson?
Well, somewhat. They're related. Because I had the ski store, the Swaza board at the time was Audrey Whitbeck and Peggy Phelps and George Kiefer. They had asked me to come to one of their board meetings to explain properly waxing cross-country skis. At the time, waxable cross-country skis were more popular than the waxless, which today probably 95% of the people ski on waxless.
Oh.
Skis, it's right. Less maintenance, it's easier to do, and it's, you know, you don't get as good performance, but anyway, so I went and did a presentation to that board, and just the makeup of the board and their interest in what they were doing with the kids got my attention, and got involved with Swaza and been involved
ever since. And are you on the board? Are you a director?
I'm on the board now. I'm a director. I'm also the treasurer. Have been for, 30 years.
Oh, good.
Been on the board. Been treasurer probably for 15. Took over after Matt Kiefer took the presidency, and so I filled in his role as treasurer.
But now, the 70-meter hill that ski jump that you did, how was that financed?
It was all by fundraising. Actually, Matt Kiefer and I were co-chairs of the fundraising effort to build the jump. We had the opportunity to host the Junior Olympics here, but the facility that we had was clearly outdated and outmoded and didn't meet some of the criteria of the jumping folks and their professional requirements. Even though there were Junior Olympics, there was still criteria for the hill and the size and the landing hill and so forth. So we had to regrade the landing hill, build a new jump tower, and it was all very elaborate project, which was completed in 2 years, both the fundraising and the building, to host the Junior Olympics in 2011. It was a $800,000 need that we successfully raised throughout the community with the support of the entire area. It was remarkable.
One of the men that I interviewed with Swanson said, if we'd known how much it was going to cost, I don't think we would have done it. But sometimes it's just as well not to know.
Probably at the end. I mean, we did have a good idea of what it was going to cost in the beginning. It just, all the things that were required, probably if we had known all them in the beginning, we might have taken a different route. But
it's such a wonderful facility.
Happy at what we did.
And
it'll be there forever now.
It's one of the few 70-meter hills in New England?
Yeah, it's actually a 65-meter hill. And it's unique in that it's the only one in the New England area. So the jumpers, when they go from the... We also have three junior training hills next to the 65-meter that the kids practice on. And then once they graduate to each different level, they go to the larger hill. And if you didn't have the 65, you'd have to go from the 30-meter to the 90. And that eliminates a lot of people.
Yeah.
So we're very unique in having that. So we attract a lot of the ski jumpers from all over the country, actually.
Now you can make snow, can't you?
We make snow now, and that whole process has changed dramatically in the time I've been there. I remember in the early years, Peter Brazzali and Bill Genetto and a few others from the fire company came over to help us with the pump truck from the hose company to try and pump water to the snowmaking gun that we got donated from Mohawk Mountain, and Nick Collin and myself and Reggie Lampson Sr.
Yeah, I talked with Reg about that.
And we spent most of our time unfreezing the frozen hose lines and not making any snow.
Oh.
Now it's very much more sophisticated with Kenny Barker and his crew and their sophistication of equipment and knowledge. And
who comes in?
Ken Barker is the new president. Not new, he's been there for quite a while. But with his background in equipment and so forth, it's been a whole different world at Swanson now, which is all good.
Oh, yeah, but it's nice to have the evolution of the changes.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Because, again, it's history.
It's
back years ago, they used to have to shovel snow to put it on the ski slope.
Right.
I think it was Reg that told me about that. And then you got into making snow, and that's changed.
Right. And that snowmaking effort, you know, to snow the hill, you know, I remember with George Kiefer, we lined the top of the hill with big sheets of plastic and throw the snow on it, and it would slide down. And then you just keep rolling the plastic up till you eventually had the whole hill covered with the snow. It was a fascinating process. And we had a corn blower that we'd throw the snow into and would shoot the snow out onto the plastic and slide down the hill, and then you just roll it up until you got to a point where it was covered.
Oh, that's clever.
And then,
that's really clever. About how many volunteers do you have in general?
Oh, gosh. There's 20 board members, but when we come to Ski Jump Weekend, it's amazing. Without a lot of organization and process, people come out of the woodwork to help.
Yeah, they come in, they do their job.
Snow the hill,
yeah.
You know, help with measuring the ski jump requirements, parking cars with the host company, and the churches using, you know, the facility for the cook-off dinners and so forth.
It's a community effort.
It's a community effort, for sure.
And what a wonderful...
I mean, they house the jumpers that come from all over New England, in some cases, other parts of the United States, but they're, you know, people donate their house to house the jumpers. And
it's nifty in the wintertime, because can be kind of a dormant period, and you've got this activity in February that people get excited about, and this is the snowball at the White Hart, or it used to be anyway.
Right.
And, you know, it's something to get excited about and something to look forward to.
Right.
So that's absolutely wonderful.
Going through approaching 100 years, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Something crazy like that.
Well, it started off with the Norwegian people that came in to work for the Scovilles and other people starting the jumping.
Yeah.
So it's how things change. Now, is it only jumping on the hill, or is it cross country, or
we on the hill itself is only jumping, but we also have other areas that people have donated the use of their property for cross country skiing, and we also run a downhill ski program, which we used to do right next to the ski jump at Bittersweet, and we're about to reinstitute that, but that was a snowmaking issue. When we ran out of snow, we basically stopped doing that. And so then we started our efforts of fundraising to allow kids to go to Catamount through Salisbury Central School ski program.
Okay.
So we helped teach the cross country and educate the kids on what it is to ski and to get outdoors. And it's been a fascinating program.
That started back in the 90s because it was going when I was teaching, and I left in 91. Yeah. So it started late 80s, early 90s.
Yes.
And the kids were always, when are you going to come skiing, Mrs. McMillan?
Right.
I said, no, that's not my thing.
My son learned to ski at Bittersweet, and he was born in 85. So you're right, it was 89, 90 kind of time frame that transitioned.
And it's a wonderful, wonderful program.
Yeah.
Because how many schools have that kind of facilities in the neighborhood and people willing to do it?
Right.
You know.
And it doesn't cost them anything.
No.
So that's great.
I keep saying it's a wonderful community. Is there anything that you'd like to add about skiing in Swassa before we go on to PNC?
I think we've covered it.
Okay.
It's a wonderful organization.
Oh, yes.
Just glad to see it continue.
It probably will, because there's so much enthusiasm and so many people look forward to it that, like all good things, it'll continue.
Yeah.
All right. How many years have you been on planning and zoning?
Oh, 30?
Probably.
Two? Something like that. It was 1983. Long time.
Yeah,
George Kiefer was responsible for that, too.
George gets a lot of people into
it. He said, we need some young people to get involved in the town. So I agreed with him. And actually, his son, Matt, and I joined at the same time, planning and zoning.
Oh, Matt's wonderful.
Yeah.
He's been such a help. Such a help.
A lot of knowledge. That family.
And that's so important. They're incomers. They weren't born here.
Right.
You know, and they've given so much to the town.
Right.
What's the purpose of the planning and zoning?
It covers all the land use regulation for the entire town and the planning of the future of land use. So we look at what we want the community to look like in 10 years out, roughly every 10 years, and develop a plan of development and conversation or conservation, and then try and make the regulations fit to what we're trying to achieve long term.
Mm-hmm.
It's a process, and then we have the rules and regulations that are created by the commission and voted on by the or presented to the public and then voted on to be implemented as rule, and then we ensure that they're followed.
How many are on the board?
There are five commissioners. There's eight people on the board, five commissioners and three alternates. Okay. And the alternates fill in when the commissioner is traveling or can't make a meeting. Martin Whelan is a commissioner. Okay. Michael Clemens is current chairman. I'm the vice chairman. Martin Whelan is the secretary. Alan Cockerline and Kathy Shire are the commissioners. And
how do you spell the Shire?
S-H-Y-E-R.
Okay.
And Donella Schiffer is alternate. And Andrea Salvatore.
Andrea which?
Salvatore. Michael Flint had been an alternate and just recently resigned, so we have an open alternate position that we're looking to fill at the moment.
He said he was going to. I use him as my computer person, and we chat. He said he was going to resign.
Oh.
Your term of office?
Is 4 years now. When I started, there were 2-year terms, and the entire commission was re-elected every 2 years. We changed that 15 years ago to alter that a little bit so we wouldn't have the potential of losing all the commissioners at any one election.
Because so you need the continuity.
Continuity, yes, exactly.
When do you meet?
We meet, now we meet on the first and third Mondays of each month.
And where?
At the town hall, 6:30 p.m.
When I asked you before, why did you stay? You said, well, I was going to get off when Mal Bernadone came on, and that didn't work out, and then you were going to get off when Jim Dresser got on, and that didn't work out.
Right. Well, it was directly related to the continuity piece, because a number of the commissioners that I had been with had gotten off after a number of years, and then we really needed some, I felt we needed the continuity.
You do.
And it wasn't there, and then when Val came on, I thought there would be the opportunity to work with him for a few years and then could retire or uh-huh. fade into the sunset. And then he ended up moving on to selectman.
Yes, he did.
And then the same thing happened with Jim Dresser.
Yep.
So Jim Dresser came on. They were both wonderful participants in the
absolutely
on the commission. And then it was, you know, they've both been great selectmen
But you bring to it so much background that the new people don't have.
And I see that quite often. Just recently we had a meeting about the transfer station and its public hearing process, mm-hmm. and the people that live over there are talking about how it's a residential area, and it is, except mm-hmm. it, you know, was designed to be light industrial.
Yes, it was.
And it was light industrial for many years, and residents, you know, there were a couple subdivisions. Riva ADOT did a subdivision there. And then we realized that all the land that was being suggested to be used for light industrial coming, you know, PM mm-hmm. 44 and mm-hmm. access to the highway and so forth was, you know, 60 or 70% residential. So did it make any sense to continue to call it light industrial? So we changed it to residential 10 or 15 years ago, something like that. But the point is, you know, reminding people that it was designed to be light industrial, and here you have a light industrial use,
right.
Because we switched it to residential.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, it was just a point of, you know, the
but it's a point of reference. It's the history.
That's can be valuable.
Very, very.
Even if...
I was talking to somebody the other day, and I mentioned a peppercorn rent. And he looked at me and he said, what's that? And I said, well, it's when you pay like a dollar a year for rental. He'd never heard the term. And yet it's something I'm very familiar with. And it takes me aback. You know?
Yeah.
And this was a young man in his late 30s. You know, gee whiz. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Anything else about the PNC before we go on?
I don't think so.
Okay. Salisbury Family Services.
Another great organization in the town.
Absolutely.
I was...
Did George Kiefer get you into that one?
No.
Oh, okay.
Anna Whitbeck did that. Anna was on the board, and she was getting off, and she thought that I would be...
She picked a good one. She picked a good one.
I was on the board for several years, and then became president for a few years. But a great organization.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Still continues to do wonderful things.
Yep. I had a wonderful interview with Patrice.
Yeah.
Is it, you know, why did you get involved with that? Was it because of what they do for the town, or was it?
It was because of what they do for the town, and in my family history, they had benefited my family in the early years when it was the Salisbury Welfare Association,
mm-hmm.
some name like that. So I knew firsthand, or somewhat firsthand, what it could provide. And they assisted with my older brother going off to college. So that was, you know, a benefit that was very valuable. So, you know, to see what that could do, and the community wanted to help continue that.
Mm-hmm. When I was teaching, I had a lot of the slow learners and the lower income. And so I was connected with what at that time was the social worker for a lot of the kids, you know, because some of them would come in and they would need books or they would need supplies, and you'd go to the social worker, and I think at that time, I don't remember now who it was, there'd be books available for the kids, or there'd be a voucher or something,
right,
so that they could have their books.
Right.
And they wouldn't, they'd be like with the other kids. You know, they didn't have to have less than the other kids had as far as school supplies.
Right.
How many years were you on that?
Oh, gosh. I don't really remember. Probably six or seven, maybe.
Are you still on it? Or
No, I've been off for quite a while.
And we'll go on to the visiting nurses. How did you get into that one?
Visiting nurse. I wasn't involved with visiting nurse. Salisbury Ambulance.
I'm sorry, Salisbury what?
Volunteer Ambulance.
That's right. I'm sorry.
I mean, involved in terms of supporting visiting nurse.
Yeah, but I had the wrong initial.
But I was on the board of the ambulance with Reese Harris and mm-hmm. Ginny Lloyd for only a short time. It happened at a time where I didn't really have the time available that was needed, I thought, for the commitment to the board. But, you know, again, another wonderful organization that Reese, you know, developed for assisting the town with the ambulance services.
Just on the board, or did you have a position?
I was just on the board. Was not a member. Was not an EMT. I'm not an EMT, but was just on the board. But again, another great organization within the town.
I had the unusual experience of having to go to the hospital in the ambulance, and the call came through, and Brian Bartram, who was one of my students, he heard it, and he says, "I'm going to go." And he came to make me feel comfortable.
Oh, nice.
You know, and it was he and it was Mike Brenner. And, you know, that was so kind. And I said to him, you know, "Why did you come? A revenge?" And he says, no. You know, I mean, for all of the bad grades I gave him in sixth grade. But it is comforting.
Yeah.
It is comforting.
Yeah.
And when I was talking with Roberta Willis, and she was saying how, you know, you go to the hospital and you know most of the people there, and I gave her the story, and she says, "I rest my case."
Yeah.
And again, it's community.
Right.
It's reaching out, it's giving back, it's helping your neighbors,
right,
which is absolutely fantastic. And I was amazed at the amount of equipment that they have and the amount of training that these people have to have. Hours and hours and hours.
And that's evolved amazingly over the years.
Oh, yeah.
What it is.
And it's amazing to me that we still have the volunteer ambulance and the volunteer fire department, because people are getting older.
Right.
And there aren't necessarily as many young people stepping up to the plate.
Right.
But they will. Twin Lakes Association.
Mm-hmm.
You're involved in that.
I'm a member of Twin Lakes Association. Was on that board for a year or two as well. It's a very local organization.
Oh, yeah.
It's primary purpose of, you know, preservation of the Twin Lakes. There's a separate organization for Lakeville, Lake mm-hmm. Wenatskapomic.
This summer I've done about 5 or 6 on the Twin Lakes Association, mm-hmm. and also the Twin Lakes Beach Club.
Right. We have a home on Twin Lakes, so that started my interest and involvement, and then the weed issues that happened over the years that everyone's been involved in within the town and both lakes.
The weed issue is pretty well taken care of, isn't it?
Well, it's cyclical.
I mean,
good chunk of what was the huge problem has been taken care of. Now there's other types of weeds, and it's probably an ongoing thing that we
always have to,
you know, experience tells us in real life that we didn't anticipate. But yeah, I mean, that's very low key, very right now, just a member of the organization,
mm-hmm.
On the board, but
You have an opportunity to rest a bit.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you'd like to add to this before we close?
Just that what a wonderful town that we live in. We're so fortunate to have the community that we have and all of these organizations that are dependent on volunteers. My concern is, as we've grown in this community, to have a higher percentage of weekend folks that may impact our volunteerism throughout the week, not necessarily on the weekends, but they're all wonderful people, but hopefully we can work around. It certainly has helped Swaziland and the people coming out, but when I think of the fire company and the volunteer ambulance and people that need volunteers here on a weekly basis, not just a weekend basis, just a concern, but we're fortunate to have all that we do, and the way that people contribute is amazing. I mean, when we talked about the fundraising for the ski jump, I mean, that was going on at the same time as the firehouse, and you know, the ambulance and the hospital, and all trying to do their fundraising, and people that, you know, were wealthy enough and well-to-do enough to make donations were approached several times, and they all...
And thought enough about the community to want to.
And right, and stepped up to the plate. It's an amazing group of people, and we're very fortunate.
And what a wonderful way to end the interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you.